I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor with Medical Economics, and I'm speaking today with Dr. Samuel Edwards, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. He is author of a recent study on burnout, focusing on the common traits of medical practices where burnout is minimal or non-existent. I started by asking Dr. Edwards why he and his colleagues undertook the study.
Well, this was part of a larger study, and it was an evaluation of the Evidence Now initiative, which was a large quality improvement initiative funded by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. So our group in Oregon, and it was sort of a big nationwide team, was funded to do sort of an enterprise evaluation, and that was called ESCALATE, or Evaluating System Change to Advance Learning and Take Evidence to Scale. So as part of that, specifically, we did surveys of practices and people within those practices at the beginning of the initiative, which was in 2015, and then several times throughout. And one thing we really wanted to understand was sort of practice climate and burnout, since that's such a common and concerning issue in primary care today.
Can you summarize what you found?
Well, I think in this study, one of the things we were most interested in is understanding sort of how much burnout was a practice level phenomenon versus sort of related to just individuals. And we found evidence that there's definitely a practice level effect of burnout. And then specifically, we characterized practices by how much burnout they had in them. What was interesting is we found a pretty large group of practices. So 30% of our sample, none of the practice members said they had any burnout. And given sort of dire descriptions of burnout in healthcare today, we thought that was a pretty interesting group. And so we chose to focus our analysis on really characterizing those zero burnout practices versus a group of practices that were very high burnout to try to understand the differences. So I think the biggest differences are we noticed that, you know, we have this measure of practice culture, which you call the adaptive reserve. You know, practices that have zero burnout have a very strong practice culture. You know, and the adaptive reserve consists of six domains. So facilitative leadership, work environment, teamwork, sense making, culture of learning, and relationship infrastructure. So all that stuff is super strong. The practices used more quality improvement strategies. So those are just different ways of doing quality improvement. And then they tended to be solo practices, clinician-owned, and didn't participate in other large transformation initiatives. So things like accountable care organizations or the Transforming Clinical Practice Initiative, a number of others. So in general, we kind of saw this signal that, you know, practices, smaller practices with greater agency, with really strong culture, tended to have less burnout, than other practices.
Do you have any thoughts as to why workplace culture is such an important determinant in the presence and level of burnout?
Well, I think it's intuitive to some extent. You know, a place where you have really strong leadership, good relationships among practice members. You know, and this has been shown before. I mean, other practice culture measures have been shown to be associated with low burnout in the past. I think one thing that stood out is leadership is so important. You know, specifically in adaptive reserve, they describe it as facilitative leadership, which is not really sort of traditional sort of command and control sort of hierarchical leadership, but really talking about fostering relationships, enhancing communication, attending to social influence and power imbalances, focusing on psychological safety and really cultivating teamwork. So those kinds of environments, I think we can all identify with places where we felt that, you know, we felt like a really strong practice culture where everyone's on the same team working towards a common mission that's meaningful and important. People like each other and care about each other, you know, versus more technocratic places where you don't feel listened to and you don't feel like the work is important. Fostering that culture is super important, but it's hard to know what to do when you have a place that has a lot of burnout and has a difficult culture and how to improve things.
I want to explore that term adaptive reserve a little bit more. And one of the areas you mentioned is, I think, psychological safety. Is that correct? What do you mean by that?
Well, let's see. I mean, start with adaptive reserve. So adaptive reserve was a scale that was developed in a different large evaluation. So it was an evaluation of the National Demonstration Project of the Patient-Centered Medical Home. So they had a large survey about sort of practice environment that they gave to a lot of different practices and then ran some survey psychometrics and found that this single domain of adaptive reserve dropped out in these specific groupings. Psychological safety is basically the idea that you feel safe bringing things up. You know, like if there's a problem, you're willing to bring it up because you don't feel like you're going to be criticized or punished for pointing out problems, you know, and that, but the idea being that, you know, if you're in an organization that's trying to improve performance and everyone's too scared to say anything's wrong, like you're not going to get anywhere, right? Like you have to have that trust. You have to have that rich communication and that feeling that you're safe to bring things up to really make progress. So again, super strong relationship with burnout.
Mm-hmm. Another one of your findings that struck me was that zero burnout practices tended not to be the ones who participate in accountable care organizations. And I'm wondering if you think that might discourage practices from joining ACOs, and if so, what impact that might have on government's desire to move practices away from fee-for-service medicine and towards value-based care?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think on the one hand, it's important to remember that all of these practices were willing to participate in evidence now. So they were already like practices willing to engage with sort of a large quality improvement effort. But the signal around accountable care organizations is pretty strong. Like we've kind of cut these data a few different ways and run different analyses. And this is a very strong relationship. As this is a cross-sectional analysis, sort of like why and how is difficult to say. But some ideas we had is that, you know, maybe practices, it's just kind of an overload. Like if you're involved in too many different quality improvement initiatives that are pulling you in too many different directions, that might lead to burnout. We know that different health plans, you know, sort of use different measures, and then ACOs have different measures, and, you know, that might be a burden on practices. But I think ACOs vary a lot too. I mean, I think on the one hand, when you put this ACO finding together with the independently owned practices and the solo practices, you might imagine that ACOs could represent a loss of agency for the practices. And so practices that have more independent control of what they're working on and why might have a better, you know, less burnout in their practice rather than those who are kind of responding to more external demands. But ACOs are different from one another, right? They're not all sort of monolithic, hospital-driven quality measure machines. And a lot of them engage practices in really constructive different ways. So I don't think there's a single lesson here, but I think there's some concern that maybe some of the policy level levers for improvement, you know, could be related with more burnout, and we should understand why.
Have you heard anything from CMS or any of the organizations representing ACOs about your study?
No, but I mean, I think the, you know, certainly we all appreciate that, you know, sort of fee-for-service medicine and primary care is suboptimal, and moving towards a system where practices are paid for meaningful work, which I think is the goal of a lot of this work, is reasonable. But I think that there, you know, there's some evidence that some of these approaches that may be a little bit more top down have the sort of the secondary impact of, you know, increasing burnout. But again, this is a cross-sectional study, so we're just kind of theorizing based on associations we see.
You mentioned earlier that a lot of the zero burnout practices were small and or clinician owned. That's not the kind of environment that most primary care doctors operate in today. Or can the features of zero burnout practices, any of them, be transferred to or replicated in larger healthcare institutions?
Yeah, well, I think on the one hand, there are a surprising number of smaller practices still in existence. You know, in some parts of the country that systems haven't totally consolidated everything yet. But it is true that certainly, I mean, I operate in a large practice environment, and many, many doctors do nowadays. It is certainly possible to maintain a strong practice culture within a large organization. I think it's sort of making larger organizations feel small. So having, you know, sort of smaller practice groups with more autonomy about how they run their day-to-day operation and have more control can really make a big difference. But I think about in our practice in, which is, you know, I work at the VA, so it's a big federal system. You know, we really take time on our team to build relationships and a strong culture so that we trust each other and work together to, you know, to get the work done. So then when a lot of the asynchronous computer-based things that we have to do all the time, you know, they're with real people that we know, and we all definitely share that common mission about, you know, providing primary care to our patients is important and meaningful, and we, you know, care about it. And then a point I think I mentioned in the paper is this concept of facilitative leadership. We do think of it's important for people with formal leadership positions to act that way, but it's something that we can kind of build that culture as a team also, like everybody can kind of participate in a work environment where there's you know, really open communication and trust.
I suppose if you're a hospital system, the sweet spot is between keeping the efficiencies that come with a large organization and still giving the smaller units, you know, be it the practices of the individual physician, enough autonomy to operate on their own and feel they're an important part of the larger organization.
Yeah. And there's just so many pressures for all these organizations. I mean, the financial pressures and quality reporting pressures. I mean, there's, you know, everyone's getting pushed to do a lot with less. And, you know, if you give people complete autonomy, it probably wouldn't work either. But we're certainly seeing in primary care, you know, things have kind of reached a head where there's like a lot of turnover. It's really hard to retain people. It's hard to recruit people to environments where people, you know, don't have any control and aren't, you know, sort of inspired by the work. And then obviously retention and recruitment is super expensive endeavor. So trying to make these work environments better, make people happier, want to stay longer, you know, hopefully do a better job. Mm-hmm. But I think there are lots of examples. And we saw that in our survey too, where there are definitely examples of larger practices that are able to achieve zero burnout and really strong adaptive reserve.
Do you have any plans for any kind of follow-up to this study?
I think, you know, Escalates, we're kind of at the close of our evaluation, but I think one thing we hope to do is take a look at the longitudinal data. So, you know, we have three waves of this survey to kind of see if burnout improved or declined across the practices over the time of the intervention, and maybe try to look at some of the associations there. Hard to say whether the intervention did it or just the changing context and challenge that continues in primary care.
What do you see as the key takeaways from this study?
Well, I think that, you know, that burnout is definitely like a practice and organization level phenomenon, and it affects all employees. So that's something I think unique about our study is it's not just physicians. This is all the employees of the practice, and that that practice level culture is really important and potentially a place for intervention. So fostering leadership development, really promoting agency at the practice level, I think will also improve burnout.
I had the feeling in reading this, or actually you say it explicitly, that too many of the remedies for burnout that we've been trying so far have been aimed at the individual rather than at the practice level. And that's aiming it at the individual is only going to take you so far.
Absolutely true. And I think an interesting thing is if you look at the burnout literature, it's been recognized that work environments and organizations contribute to burnout like forever, but we continue to offer individual level solutions, even though we kind of know that the organization and the core of the work environment is more of the cause. So, you know, I think we're just adding to the literature that really organization-wide approaches are essential.
Well, Dr. Samuel Edwards, thank you very much. This has been very helpful. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't covered?
No, this has been great, Jeff.
Okay. Thanks very much for your time.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And when you do, please leave a review. You can find previous podcast episodes on our website, medicaleconomics.com, under the Media tab. We welcome your comments and suggestions for future podcast topics. You can email these to us at medec@mjhlifesciences.com. And while visiting our website, be sure to check out the latest news about the business of healthcare and explore the many other resources you'll find there. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.